You are listening to Right Back Atcha, the 2000s pop music podcast where we have fun taking pop music seriously, hosted by the Australian Idol, who's one part Sarah Watmore and one part Rosie Ribbons, who I'm sure has rocked the Gareth Gates hairstyle, David Lim. And me, he describes himself as the Nicky Chapman and Zoe Burkett of podcasting, wow. Joel Babington.
Hello, JB. I love that for you. The Nicky Chapman and Zoe Burkett of podcasts. I'm feeling that for you.
Thank you.
Diva energy, but also like nurturing, knows her shit. That is you.
Good work ethic, but fun.
Yeah. You know, booked look, and busy always. Both
booked
of them.
And busy. We just got to put out there what we want in our life now, you know?
Exactly. That is just the totems of your life and career. I love to see it. How have you been, JB?
I have been good. I am really excited about what we're going to do today. How about you, Davo? How have you been?
Very, very good. Look, we have been talking about doing some sort of pop idol celebration for some time, but it wasn't until we did our Insta Live just after Christmas last year that we felt a little bit of urgency from everyone listening, right?
Yeah, like, are you guys doing it? It was like expected of us. In a fantastic way, in a fantastic way.
In a fantastic way, because this was similar to when we did our UK Soap Stars to Pop Stars episode.
Today is going to be very similar to that.
Educational.
Fun, greatest hits, celebratory.
JB's going to take me through UK culture of that time. And a lot of these things I can only come in with like bits and pieces of memory as a kid growing up in Australia, but boy, do I love this 360 experience, putting it all together.
School is in session, guys. But yes, I am so happy that you guys really wanted this because, yeah, light a fire, light my fire.
It started already, the puns. I love it.
And we got to light it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah, we got to do what we got to do and hopefully you guys will enjoy it. And then hopefully David will give me a lesson on Australian Idol at some point.
Oh my God, absolutely. A tour of Australian Idol is imminent. We have to do it.
So before we kick off everything, David, can you read us one of our lovely 5-star reviews?
We love hearing from you guys, especially, you know, seeing how memories of music that we're talking about just takes you to a happy place. This one is left by TF London. It says, an impressive body of work. That is a nod to something we say a lot. I came to this with some trepidation, having tried a few similar podcasts that shared my love of noughties pop, but had a snarky, catty tone about it. Which is a shame since, like so many gays, this music spoke to me because it was inclusive, empowering, and totally available to anyone who wanted it, regardless of kudos or credibility. But these guys clearly share that warmth and affection, and that comes through when you listen. Even when a track is dissed or missed, and this is in bracket, and I'd urge David and Joel to go back and re-listen to the Sugar Babes' Maya and Two Hearts, it's with the understanding that everyone has their favorites, and you're not wrong if yours isn't theirs. Because the whole point of bands we all love is we love them when they weren't the ones everyone else loved. Thank you both, and keep up the good work. Kiss.
Oh, thank you so much. I think that is my favorite review that we've ever had, because that just really sums up exactly what we aim to be doing here. We say it all the time, but everything at Right Back Atcha is with a lot of love. The reason why we're doing this is because we love 2000s pop music so, so much. So even when something isn't, you know, the 10 out of 10 for us, it's always done with so much love and affection. And we're so thrilled to hear that that comes across, or I am anyway.
I'm so happy to hear that as well. And it means so much that, yeah, you've taken the time to listen and notice that, and that has resonated with you. So that, yeah.
Oh, fan bloody Fantastic. So, David, well, with that glowing judges' feedback, shall we kick off a little bit of Pop Idol UK?
As it happens this year, actually 20 years this month that we crowned the first ever winner of Pop Idol here in the UK. So it feels very timely that we're doing this. This is a very special episode where it's going to be sort of a greatest hit selection of series one. So we're touching on everyone from Will Young, obviously the lovely winner, Gareth Gates, Rosie Ribbons, Sarah Watmore, who didn't make the top 10, but we got to give her a shout out, Darius, Zoe Burkett, and so much more. You guys are really in for a treat here. So we'll be only touching on the debut eras, though, for lovely Will, Gareth, Rosie and Darius.
Yeah, we're keeping it, you know, within their still the Pop Idol era.
Well, it's still fresh. Yeah, we want to capture the energy and what it was like in that period of time.
Now, before we kick off, I just want to say what I love about Pop Idol UK, especially this first series, it was really iconic. And we throw the word iconic around a lot on this podcast, I know, but this was really event must-watch television. It felt like everyone in the UK was watching it. We'd very recently had Pop Stars, which fixated us all, but it felt like we'd not had anything quite like this, you know, following through the journey, the auditions, through to the live shows. When you watch it back now, and luckily there's so many clips available on YouTube, more than Pop Stars and Pop Stars The Rivals, there are a lot of ropey elements to the format, but it really did set the template.
There is a sweetness and there is an innocence to the contestants and just the way the show is structured and the way they script the banter, the interaction between the host and the contestants. Like, there's something very green about it. And I love that because as the years went by in our lifetimes, we've seen X Factor come and go. And even within the lifetime of X Factor, us as consumers, we became much more knowing. And also the people going on these shows became much more self-aware and knowing. And there's an element of just it being a little bit calculated and some of the magic and innocence is lost. Whereas here, it was also new.
For me, and I think a lot of pop fans that grew up with this, you look back at these sort of 10 finalists in this show with so much love. Even though technically, you know, you might see better singers later down the line and flashier things, there was just a lot of purity to this. After the live shows, David, they'd have an audience Q&A where the audience could ask sort of the judges questions. And
was that aired?
It was aired, I think, before the results. So you'd have them...
A bit of filler time.
A bit of filler time. So while it was so new, people would be asking, like, why don't the 10 finalists get to stay on for every week? And then, you know, cast a winner on the final episode and stuff that was new to us then. So we'd think like that, but now we just go along with it because that's the format. I remember being in primary school at the time and it was playground chat, like, consistently. But likewise, it was chat with the adults as well. And so much so, I think I might have mentioned on this podcast, but when it got down to the final, I was tearing up bits of paper, writing vote for Will and sticking it on lampposts with chewing gum.
Oh my God, you were literally street team.
Like, I remember it, and I was so young, but I remember it clearer than anything. I was like, Mum, can I buy some chewing gum? Because yes, that's not something I would really buy, like sweets. Oh my God, I want sweets 24/7, but I'd never really asked to buy chewing gum. And she's like, yeah, why? And she's like, oh, we can get you Blue Tack if you want. And I was just like, no, I know that, like, I know it's a bit gross, but like chewing gum's going to...
is stronger.
Stick to these things better than Blue Tack's going to. And then he won. So the Romford Street Team.
The Romford Street Team headed up by JB and JB alone. Oh my God. Do you know what I would love if they, on results night, read it like the election polls and see like how many votes they got in each area and Romford by a landslide.
Absolutely. That would have been fantastic, but alas, it wasn't. But if you do a deep dive back in a YouTube poll, which me and David have very much enjoyed doing, in the audition stage, you saw who we now know as lots of familiar faces from this era of reality television. And it's fascinating how these people who you've not necessarily thought about or seen in sort of 10, 15, 20 years, but you see them on screen and in my mind I go, it's them, it's them, it's them. So we had the lovely, gorgeous Nick Major from Popstars, Arrivals and Fix. He made it to the final 50 on this show. Nicola Ward, who was also on Popstars, Arrivals and in the first lineup of girl band Cookie, she was on this show. The guy from Popstars, Arrivals, I don't know if you remember seeing him, that sung Anastasia, and they got him to leave and come back and sing Anastasia again. He auditioned on this. And someone that ended up on Emmerdale very recently. So lots of different faces from the industry. And it's just, you go, you're watching, you go, oh my God, there were other people I remember seeing from the first series of Pop Stars who made it again to about the final 50 that have popped up on this. And I go, I'm watching it and I go, he was on Pop Stars. And then I'm like, Joel, what is in your mind that you just instantly know that?
But that's what we love you, and that's why you're doing this. You know what? Speaking of pop stars, I find it really interesting that the gap of time between Pop Star Series 1, which was also on ITV, and Pop Idol was literally within the same calendar year. And then Pop Idol aired between October 2001 right through to February 2002. And that in itself for me is interesting because that show went through Christmas period. So I was like, you don't really see programming like that with TV these days. They normally try to like take you up to Christmas time and then give it a break and New Year's and different programming, but ambitious.
Absolutely. And then we had February 2002, Pop Idol Series 1 winner is announced. That summer, we're kicking off Pop Stars Arrivals to end in the Christmas number one, as we spoke about in our last episode. So it is really...
And you kind of understand when we talk about it in our Girls Aloud episode about the audience fatigue by that point with series two of Pop Stars, because they've already had two seasons of these, like just bashing the people with it.
Yeah, I think the fatigue really showed by Pop Idol series two because it was less popular.
So let's look at who the judges are. We've got Simon Cowell, who we all know these days to be very prolific in the judging role, Pete Waterman, Nikki Chapman. Now, Nikki was a judge on series one of Pop Stars. So she just finished a gig in that same calendar year. Went straight in. I mean, did she even have time to work at 19 Management and, you know, see what S Club 7 was doing? Probably not. Nikki was booked and busy. And then there's a radio DJ, Neil Fox, on it, which I quite like, actually. I'm not familiar with Neil's work.
Yeah, he was very famous at the time.
He was like the Grimmy of that era, wasn't he?
Yeah, so Simon Cowell really was kind of the least known. I loved Nikki Chapman. Like, Nikki Chapman is one of my favourite people on television all time ever. Me and Alex were watching The Chase, Celebrity Chase the other day, and Nikki Chapman was on it. And I just started beaming and like acting all silly because I was just so excited. And he was like, are you drunk? What's wrong with you? And I was like, I just love drunk Nikki Chapman. Nikki. I just chunk on Nikki.
You know, there's two things I love very much in a judge: constructive criticism, a measured tone, and experience. I mean, obviously, Simon Cowell, who at the time, I believe, was at RCA, it was pivotal as well to have his opinion. But rightly so, as we see in this series, Will Young checks him for the way he delivers some of his opinions. So sometimes the way you deliver your verdict and the way you communicate can get in the way of you and your intentions. You know what I mean?
If Nikki Chapman told me to call it a day, I would have to seriously consider it.
She wouldn't even say call it a day. She'd be like, Joel, have you got any other skills you think you could fall back on?
Yes. Well, anyway, on that note, I think, ladies, it's time to get down. Shall we kick off with our first? She wasn't a finalist, unfortunately, but she is the ultimate semi-finalist of our hearts. She is the Salford Princess of Pop, Sarah Watmore.
Oh my God, Jolie B, I am so thrilled that we are finally talking about Sarah Watmore in depth on this show. As you know, I've always loved When I Lost You. That single did some things in Australia. But, you know, since doing our podcast, really, and engaging with our listeners and finding fellow Sarah appreciators, I've ascended into a new level of appreciation for this woman. And I was so shocked to learn that she wasn't even in the top 10.
So Sarah was shining star on Pop Idol. Like, she shone through all the rounds.
And Pete Waterman said something very interesting in her first audition, didn't he? He said that I'm looking for someone that my 10-year-old daughters would get excited for and want to rush out and buy their records. You are that person.
So spot on. And what he meant by 11-year-old daughters, he meant in 20 years, 30-year-old gay men will be excited about.
And would be doing podcasts about this, talking about the exact same records. Yes, here we
Absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely.
Clocked us, Pete. Yes.
So what's so interesting about the format of Idol, and I think in all the world idols, they still kept it, is the final 50 got split up into 5 heats of 10. And the audience pick 2 people to go to the final 10. And I just think that's so wild, because say in one heat of 10, you have like 10 really good ones. I know they'll split it up in a way that it's not. But you could, in theory, have 10 people worth being finalists in one heat and only 2 will go through. So Sarah was in heat 5. And unfortunately, she didn't get through to the final 10. She was 3rd in her heat. And she got a live proposal on air from Simon Cowell. After her performance, his feedback for her was, marry me.
Bloody hell.
I don't think that would fly as well today.
No, absolutely not.
But that was the time, you know, that was like glorious praise at the time. Being a ready-made pop star really wowed and dazzled Simon Fuller. So even though she didn't make it through to the final, she got offered a worldwide management deal with Simon and 19 Management.
That is so impressive. So does this bring us to her debut single, When I Lost You?
It does. It also brings us to the learning lesson in life in always take the meeting and the opportunity, because you never know where it's going to lead to. When I lost you, I lost everything, but I as someone would say if they lost their earpods now, when I lost you, I lost everything.
This song just took on a whole new level with technology. I was obsessed with When I Lost You, and this was quite present in Australia. I remember seeing this on Video Hits, that stunning music video. I don't think I quite connected that she was on Pop Idol. It doesn't matter, because I thought she was just an exciting pop star. To this very day, I still think about this song. A lot. If you're thinking it sounds like Kylie, that's because it was originally offered to Kylie.
Yeah, it was written for Fever.
And it sounds like it, and we're not mad about it. We love it. What was your first impressions of this song?
I actually always thought the next single should have been the debut single.
I come across this a lot since moving to the UK, because in Australia, I don't think we really knew Automatic. Maybe it was released as a single. It went very under the radar, but almost every gay I talk to about Sarah Watmore here is like, Automatic, Automatic. I'm like, y'all are Automatic stans here. I'm still like hung up on When I Lost You.
So in build up to this episode, I really, really appreciate for this song, for this fantastic single that it is. You need to establish yourself first to do sort of a bit of an electro edgy thing. If you're going to be like, I'm a full out pop star. It takes Kylie, who's a legend and a veteran already, or Rachel or Holly, who are in their second album.
I find this verdict so interesting, because I see Automatic as second album material. It's very much the night to When I Lost You's day. Joel, I just want to very quickly say the B-side for this single, Are You Ready for Love? Oh my God. Now, this was a revelation for me a couple of years ago, and I cannot stop thinking about it ever since.
Tell me, are you ready for love?
Stunning, iridescent disco pop, giving not only Kylie, but also our Aussie girl, Sophie Monk. Tell me, are you ready for love? This was a top 10 smash for lovely Sarah. Number 6 here in the UK.
10 in Scotland, 32 in Ireland, 49 in Australia.
Shall we move on to single number 2 in February 2003, Automatic, which you love very clearly, JB.
Automatically love it.
Automatic.
me, this is a in-your-face pop-tastic bop.
I love the electropop production, that's for sure. You know, it feels like they're definitely going for a cooler, edgier sound and image for her. If disco pop with the first single was a little too frothy, they definitely want to give this one more teeth. And I get it, and I love it. And that music video where it's black and white and is really reportage style, she was definitely giving Appleton cross with Holly Valance.
Yeah, so look, it's a fantastic music video. But I think my issue with it is... it's just way too edgy for this song, in my opinion. Like, I always think, I appreciate it now, and I think When I Lost You song and video go perfectly hand in hand. But in the 20 years up until this epiphany, I always thought Automatic should have had a When I Lost You style music video. I just thought the music video we got for Automatic did not fit it at all. It's a gorgeous music video. Sarah's fantastic in it. It's beautifully made. I thought there was not cohesiveness in the planning and the marketing for this song and video.
No, but I think what's clear is that they were trying to see what would resonate in early 2003. And the pop industry by then would have been very different. We would have had Girls Aloud.
Yeah, No Good Advice and everything.
So things were getting a bit grittier.
Yeah.
I actually thought the leap from When I Lost You to Automatic was a little too far and a little too jarring. If she had kept it to material that's similar to When I Lost You, we might be okay.
Don't you think that watching this song, watching this music video, listening to this song, watching that as a complete piece, looking at Sarah being fantastic, actually feels like what Kathy Dennis's solo career could have been 10 years on? It's a 2003 solo Kathy.
The
everything.
Possibility for Miss Kathy Dennis's solo career in the noughties is endless. Like, look at all the bops she's written for the other girls, cherry pick the best ones, and honestly, she would have slayed.
So, David, that was an 11 smash here in the UK. Sarah had a whole debut album ready to go, Living Proof, and unfortunately it didn't get released due to the chart position of the second single, which is wild to look at in 2022 eyes. But as we know with our podcast and this era of music, it is what it is. To gaze in the know and pop fans that know how to Google, you can find it out there. So give it a whirl. It is fantastic. But it wasn't the end for Sarah. She was busy still with 19, working as a songwriter and working on her own stuff. In 2009, she released what was technically her debut album, although to gay pop fans, it will be her second album, Time to Think. And in 2016, as recently as 2016, she released her EP, Full Circle. But we might hear a songwriting credit from her later in this episode.
Oh, yes, Sarah.
But also, did you know there was a brief moment in time where she was almost going to have Toxic by Britney Spears?
I find that so wild and interesting. And, you know, would have been happy for Sarah to have it, but we love that.
It had to go to Britney.
Yeah, it was a moment. It was a pop culture moment.
Every straight man needs a favourite Britney Spears song.
That is both a read and also a fact.
She also... which I completely, as JB solo pop star would do as well, you know, it was completely the right choice for Sarah Watmore. But she turned down the chance to be, she turned down the chance to audition as a backing singer for Kyla.
You got to do what you got to do and exactly. Focus on your artistry. And yeah, there's a time for everything. And at the time, it wasn't the right time for that gig.
Absolutely. So David, let's kick off with our 10, who's actually going to be 11 finalists of Pop Idol. So, David, we're going to take you in at our 10th place of the top 10. We have the lovely Corbin from London. Now, Corbin actually got through the same heat as Will. So, Corbin was second and Will was first on their heat. A notable Corbin performance from me is if you watch the Pop Idol live tour, which is all 10 finalists got to do an arena tour after the show. He sings Freedom and is fantastic. He is living his big pop star serve best life.
I think Corbin would have been a little bit of a crush for me if I was watching this back in the time. I must say, what I really love about these week one VTs that they did in this time is that, since getting through, we're going to go back to your day jobs and see how your life has changed since you auditioned for Pop Idol. So there he was in a phone shop, which was where he was working, quitting. He's saying, he's quitting to work on music full time, and they've got a shot of him in the office signing his resignation papers on a clipboard in a manager's office. Like, it was so staged, but so adorable. And do you know what? Vocally, I think Corbin is amazing. It probably did him no favors to be in the top 10 with Will Young, because I think the instant comparison is there. You can definitely hear some similarities, but I think with Corbin, there is a little bit more of a musical theater flourish. And I just don't understand why the judges disliked him so much, because some of the critiques I heard was like unnecessarily harsh.
You're cocky. Yeah.
It's a shame, really, that they had to cut him that hard.
Yeah, because I think it puts an unfair hindrance on the audience. Like, he's just doing, going out there trying his best. And it's so weird when they're like, I think you're cocky, but I think you'll do really well on this show.
Literally week one, one of the guys, like, I don't know if it was Pete or Simon, was saying, you're not my pop idol. That's it. You're not my pop idol. And that was a comment. I was like, oh, okay. What can I do with that feedback?
Yeah, like, so there's nothing I can work on. And it's you know, the thing of like, you're told you're too cocky, but if you come out on a show like this, you need to be confident and go for it. Because if not, you'll be told, you're shy, you've lost it this week, what's going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, and you've like got such a short space of time on stage to sing, you're going to have to go for it.
So we don't have any post-pop idol work to talk about today, unfortunately. But Corbin is very successful these days in the beauty industry. And I just say, get it, Corbin. Live your best life. So we're going to move on to technically a joint 10th place. He had to leave the competition due to illness. But we have Rick Waller-David now. Rick is from Gillingham in Kent. And unfortunately, he never got to perform on the live shows.
How wild is that? Like, week one, they bring him on stage to show a VT of him explaining why he can't sing. He's got laryngitis, but they showed it in a VT. He's standing on stage with Anton Deck. And then they're like, hopefully you can get better to sing next week, right? And he basically mimes a nod or something and off he goes. Obviously very, very devastating. We do have a similar kind of vocal issue drama with our series one of Australian Idol that is at an even more climatic point in a competition. So we're not talking week one and two. But yeah, seeing what happened with Rick, I was like, oh my God, it's giving me flashbacks to our Australian Idol series one.
Oh my God. So yeah, unfortunately in week two of the live shows, Rick did have to leave and he was replaced by Darius. And I mean, just to think what could have been.
So crazy.
Good for Rick. He did have two hit singles. He released a cover of I Will Always Love You at number 6 in the UK charts, which is fantastic. And then he had another single, a cover of Something Inside So Strong, UK 25, released his own album. And he is still doing music, performing in bands, live events, everything. Get it, Rick. David, let's get it to a very prominent 9th place. We've got Jessica Garlick. She's from Kidwelly in Wales. And, you know, she's got another Welsh princess of pop here. We've got
Charlotte Church.
We've got Charlotte Church.
And Jessica Garlick.
And Jessica, I mean, she's not an Anne, but she should be a Jessica Ann Garlick. She's that legendary. Now, pre-pop idol, David, Jessica was getting out and about. She appeared on Michael Barrymore's My Kind of Music and Star for a Night. But Jessica came onto Pop Idol and she did very well, and she was a firm favourite right from the get-go, and she was a Pete Waterman stan.
She definitely sounded so mature as a singer. It was giving me Belinda Carlisle in there. I would have liked to see a bit more from her because I think she would have delivered some real knockout performances.
Oh, absolutely. You know, stand out for Jessica as she sung Proper Don't Preach on the TV show and on the live tour. Speaking of her mature voice, David, we had one of our lovely listeners had a little bit of insider info about the gorgeous and stunningly talented Jessica Garlick and said if she hadn't have got voted out in week two, her next two tracks would have been the next week she would have sung Close to You by the Carpenters.
Yep, very her.
And for the next week after that, for movie week, she would have sung What If by Kate Winslet. And she would have just owned both of those songs with her stunning, like, mature, powerful voice, you know. And she would have outsung Kate Winslet. You know, we're still waiting on KW1, but Kate had to sing it for a film. I think it was contractual. She's not very proud of it now, but we are. It's on Claire Sweeney's album, I believe. It's very musical theory. It's like, what if I had never let you go? I'll stop there, but I could continue.
I love that, JB. Okay. We need a Jessica Garlick and JB duet. Is that on the cards for JB1, the debut album? Can you imagine you're there with your, like, residency at Royal Albert Hall? Ladies and gentlemen, Jessica Garlick.
If we could only turn back time, well, I guess we'll never know.
Gorgeous.
Standing ovation for Jessica, not for me. So Jessica did leave, but to show what an impact and what a powerful moment in time this show was, she was a respectable choice and contender to represent the UK in Eurovision that year, David.
And she placed third with her song Comeback. Third. I don't know what, I'm not very, like, super off book with Eurovision, especially with, like, UK contestants, but I feel like somebody should have told me in the last 8+ years of living in the UK.
Yeah, that should have been in the knowledge.
Should have been my life in the UK test.
Exactly. So not only did she place third, David, but she is the highest placing British entry in Eurovision of the 21st century.
Christ, now that is something. How will I survive?
Twitter gays and gay Eurovision fans in the know revere this and hold it in such a place, but I think it's not spoken about enough and not remembered enough. Like, we talk about Jade doing extremely well in Eurovision. She came fifth. It was fantastic. But this isn't remembered to the level it should be.
That's what I mean. No one has said anything to me about this. Yeah.
And it's mad. So Comeback, right? Let's talk about Comeback. Perfect for Jess. It's kind of that young adult contemporary. I don't normally like sending a ballad to Eurovision, but this is how you do it. And this is like, oh, I like it when we send a ballad like this to Eurovision. Fantastic singer, fantastic song.
So this song was written by an airline pilot who had no previous music industry connections or experience. Apparently, he's tried several years to get songs placed for a song for Europe. Fun fact about Comeback, the demo that was submitted to the BBC for consideration was sung by the late Bernie Nolan, one of the Nolan sisters.
Lovely. So did you know, David, that the people doing this song thought, oh, it would be cool to get a pop idol contestant on this. It's such a big thing. And they heard and found out that it was one of Jessica's, like, dream achievements.
Yeah, that she was a Eurovision fan. So they were like, okay, great. We'll give her a ring.
Done and done. So this song was a number 13 smash hit here in the UK. And David, there is a Top of the Pops performance with Carrie and David Grant as the backing singers.
Wow. Icons only, literally.
And then they'd go off to do Fame Academy. But they did work on Pop Idol Series 1 as the vocal coaches. So not much else for Jessica, unfortunately, apart from just being an absolute legend. But in 2009, she independently released, she reteamed with this guy that wrote Comeback, and she released her own single, Hard Not to Fall. And she released it the day before the Eurovision final in 2009, which is exactly what I would do.
Cash in on that timing. Absolutely, Miss Garlick. You did what you had to do.
So next up in eighth place, we have the nation's favourite train driver, Aaron Bailey. Now, Aaron is from Newcastle. Aaron beat Darius into the semi-finals for the live shows. But as we all know, fate would have it that Darius would make it to the live shows. Now, some notable performances I have from Aaron is he became a real sort of cheeky chappy that the nation sort of lapped up at the time.
I cannot believe it. Like, one of his kind of chats with Anton Deck, he said, oh yeah, you know, I'm adjusting to fame really well or something like that. I'm going to frame up all the knickers that I've got thrown at me. Maybe I can put it in a book and press it like leaves. Very cheeky chappy, very like, you know, pub banter, but
yeah,
on national telly, you're just like, wow.
So yeah, notable performance from him is that he sung Walking in Memphis on the live tour. And it was also the song in his semi-final heat that helped him beat not only Darius, but our girl Sarah Watmore to the finals. And this is what I mean of it's wild of the format. Because in those heats, you've got not only Rick and Aaron, but you also have Sarah and Darius. And it's just sort of
very
like
different artists. How do you pick? Yeah. I find it quite interesting for our lad Aaron that very many years after his Pop Idol stint, he was in a reality TV supergroup called G-Mania alongside Andy Scott Lee, Stacey McLean from S Club Juniors, Ricky Loney, don't know who that is, and Kavanaugh, our boy Kavanaugh. They went around town performing covers of Glee hits, which basically meant they were doing covers. But yeah.
And my girl Emma from Clea was also part of this supergroup. And I'm just happy they all had a big paid gig. You know, there is also a G-Mania music video out there that you can look up, David, after our record. I think it's a Christmas song. Aaron is one of those contestants, and correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but I think he's someone that gave it his best shot and that actually started his journey in singing instead of some of our other contestants that are all like
already
jobbing
trained
performers and trained. So that was kind of the launch pad for him, and he's been singing ever since. So you can now hire the Aaron Bailey Band, and they play at weddings and private events in Newcastle and the Northeast. And he just seems to be having a whale of a time, and good on you, Aaron. Absolutely go for it. So in at seventh place, David, actual original Derry girl, we have the gorgeous and lovely Laura Doherty. Aside from being a Pop Idol contestant and just finished her A-levels, she was a local TV presenter in Ireland as well, doing a local MTV sort of thing.
That is the dream job for me. Like, she's doing what a lot of people would do in reverse, you know, try to be a pop star first, and then when that's sort of coming to an end, get into music television presenting. But Miss Laura was Hannah Montana about the whole situation.
So notable for me is actually her audition. So she did, her audition performance was to Janet Jackson's Together Again. My favourite thing about it is she finished the audition, she was all done, and then she went, "Is that me away?" And they were like, "That's you away." And that is just how I want to leave.
Is that my cue to go?
Am I done? All done.
I like that as a saying.
That is now how I want to end and leave every conversation and situation. Is that me away? Yep, that's you. Thanks.
That's how we should wrap up every single episode from now on. Is that me away? Right?
So our Laura, she unfortunately was in the bottom two every week she was in, but she stayed for 3 weeks and then she was eliminated. Our girl has gone on to graduate university with a degree in music, and she's been teaching hip hop dancing. So go for it, Laura. Next up, David, we have someone very special who I know you're not only waiting to talk about, but I know our listeners are waiting just a little bit to listen to us talk about. It's not going to be blink and you miss it. We are going to get into it. We have another Welsh princess of pop here, an Aussie Welsh princess of pop. We have Ms. Rosie Ribbons, born in Australia, moved to Wales when she was 5 years old.
I want to just say to all our listeners and to you, JB, a massive apology, because I have been rather reluctant, even dismissive at times, of getting into Rosie Ribbons. I mean, just looking back at my attitudes in the last 2-3 years, it's actually borderline rude. It's rude. Honestly, I was so fucking wrong about Rosie Ribbons. This album, these two singles, absolutely slap. If I was here in the UK at that time, I would have 100% stanned Rosie Ribbons.
You'd have been the Rosie Street team.
I would have been there with my note and chewing gum on lampposts. Like, that would have been me.
Me and you looking at each other across the road. Sticking up our things without chewing gum, tearing the others down when they've gone.
Now, I can't believe this, JB, but she was only 18 at the time of doing this. And she was, in my opinion, one of the strongest vocalists in this competition.
So Al Rosie, 2001, bored with her supermarket job, auditioning for Pop Idol. And she auditioned with an original song, David. She sang a song she wrote called Colours. They loved it, but they did ask to see another song. That is the format of the show. Got to appreciate that. Rosie was a front runner for this competition, David. In her heat in the top 50, when it was her 10, she won hers by a landslide. She received over half the votes to get through.
Queen.
Rosie's standout for me is obviously the audition of Colours, because, you know, singing your own song is a power move. The most unfortunate, memorable performance for Rosie is ABBA Week. The week she went, she sung The Winner Takes It All. And wow. It just didn't suit Rosie, unfortunately. And I think this is when, unfortunately, the format doesn't work for the people sometimes. It's when someone has their own voice, and Rosie certainly has her own voice. It's hard when you're trying to fit it into something else for the theme of the week.
One song choice could really, like, fuck you up. What would have been a good ABBA song for Rosie? I don't know. What's in, like, a good rhythmic ABBA song? Story of a Heart.
Da, One da, Night da, in Bangkok. Da, da, da.
Yes, definitely. 18's One Night in Bangkok would have been the Rosie Ribbons ABBA
Mamma
song.
Mamma Mia, 18's version. An artiste like Rosie, or any of them, they don't have the chance to make the song their own, because while they're singing live in the show that's kind of first of its kind like this in terms of the live shows, we are hearing them sing to very generic backing tracks. We haven't got full live band. We haven't got backing singers like we do now like we did on the X Factor. They're still having to fit within the mold of basically a karaoke track. And that is really tough. So good on all of them, really. Frontrunner, Leave Me On Sick, which is still really impressive. Our Girl signed to probably the most spoken about record label on this podcast, Telstar Records.
Home to Cheeky Girls, home to Mystique icons, and the VB, Victoria Beckham, in her second album era. But before the VB, there was the RR.
The RR. So a 5-album deal reportedly worth £1 million.
If she was such a front runner, which I know she is, and everyone loved her, where was 19 management? Why were they not stepping up?
I don't know. But my question isn't where was that, but it's where's the Pete Waterman Jive offer?
If I was Rosie at this point, maybe I don't want to sign to Jive.
Yeah.
Rosie has a little bit more of an edge. A little bit more of an R&B flavor. You know, her idol is Mariah Carey, and she's a Y2K pop star. So maybe Telstar was the best offer on the table in terms of her creative control, in terms of who she is as an artist. Maybe that's why she went with them.
So we're going to have another right back at you divide.
Oh, here we go.
Because on one hand, I do completely agree with you, and because I love the output that we got, believe it or not. And I know I've said other things previously. How much of the R&B and the edge that we got on this really fun output that we're about to talk about, how much of that was Rosie's decision and how much of that was Telstar trying to fit her into a edgy Britney, Kylie, Y2K pop star mold? Because we've seen the side of her singing Mariah, not the fun R&B edge of Mariah that you're trying to shoehorn into this. We've seen Hero, we've seen that album track, we've
More
seen
ballads
and singing, and that's how the nation knows her. And I think if she'd gone with Pete Waterman, if that offer was on the table, she could have done a 2000s answer to a Claire from Steps record. And I think that actually could have really helped with the audience knowing her and this big voice. I don't know how much of that R&B edge is Rosie. Let's go to October 2002. Blink.
Okay, now this is a Y2K pop star look. So, what you got? Better have not. Spit it out. Are you telling me she hits her spot? Is it a hit? Maybe your lips? I gotta know. Could it be the nails on her fingertips? Do they scratch when you say that? Listen up, baby. Now don't you give me that crap you wanna play. Given her kind of image and her output of what she did on Pop Idol, it would have been more natural and understandable for the public for her to do something that was cohesive with that. But God, she really embraced the pop star in her. She came through. We're talking choreography. Girl was giving you Christina Milian. She was giving you baby Britney.
If anyone wants to know what the definition of 2002 pop star style was, Watch the Rosie Ribbons Blink music video. We have the Dream Y2K inside a white Rubik's Cube music video moment here. The style, we've got the red hat. We have those trousers with sort of the flare, the like string bits coming off, which was so definitive pop star of the time. And who knew Rosie would be able to dance like that?
And this is what I really respect of her. Like, she full on pivoted. Like, she was going for the shock factor. She was trying to spring that on us. And maybe the UK public at this time wasn't ready for it because all the stuff that was coming out was like 50 Shades of Vanilla. No shade. We like it. There's a time and place. But Miss Rosie was giving you a concept here.
What I think is fantastic is that it seemed like she was a Telstar priority act. Rosie, around this era, supported Liberty X and Blue on tour.
Oh, that is the right fucking move, yes.
And I saw her on both of those tours.
Wow.
What I have clear in my mind is literally, I wouldn't have needed to see the pictures of this. I have those trousers in my mind. I have the hat. I have the look. I have the routine. Very signature, ready, pop star going.
I like Blink a lot as a song, but you know what I like slightly better, JB? The Rishi Rish Urban Rose remix. She's done a Mariah here by re-recording the vocals of Blink to fit a more R&B and slowed down tempo. She's a pro. And there were some elements of this remix where I thought, okay, she's giving me R&B era Pink.
That's a great reference point to have. Pink, me and my girls in town. Pink, you know I'm playing around. Pink, this is how we get it down. So this went in a very respectable UK number 12 hit in October 2002.
And then next comes the second single from Miss Rosie.
Before Push the Button defined lifts, Rosie invented them.
It wasn't a big, big hit for Jessica Simpson. It was number one on the Joel Babington charts.
I don't think it was released as a single internationally, but which is why it would have been great for
Miss Rosie, because she really owned this. And there were lots of elements of Rosie's cover of A Little Bit that I really enjoyed.
You all know I'm a Jessica stan, but Rosie brought it, like, vocally, performance-wise. But is the song worthy of two huge pop stars giving it everything they've got and more?
I don't know about you. Ever since our Jessica Simpson episode, I've been listening to it a lot. So maybe the A&R persons were right.
Look, none of us want to end up in a sticky situation, so we are giving you out every indication.
I do have a copy of this CD single at the bottom drawer of my desk at work, because you remember when we went to Dan from Track by Track's place, which we've talked about a lot on this podcast. There were a couple of CDs that you were like, oh yeah, I want to keep for myself, but you didn't take a couple of those CDs. Now I'm like, oh Joel, I might want to hang on to them. And one of them is definitely Miss Rosie's A Little Bit,
with the iconic Rosie like peeking through the boys' toilets, like, I'm Rosie, here I am, A Little Bit. So we've got another iconic music video here. As I said, like, she's serving lifts. We've got choreo. And I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but it's a little bit, if Lady Sovereign was doing Britney with the cap and everything. And what I find interesting is that Rosie on Idol went from a ballad Mariah inspired contestant and pop star to becoming a very edgy Britney, Kylie pop star. And I do wonder if that was Rosie's downfall in kind of the mainstream success.
I stand by this, though. If I was Rosie, I would stand by this.
Yeah, so obviously we love it. Like, go for it. That's how you be a pop star. So this went in at number 19 here in the UK. And I'll take this with a pinch of salt because it is from Wikipedia and we don't know how true it is. Even though A Little Bit went in at a disappointing chart position, they were planning what the next single was going to be. And at one point it was going to be Good Thing, which is on the album. Then it was going to be a double A side of Good Thing and Heaven. And then apparently at one point there was talk of her doing a double A side of a cover of Groove Is in the Heart. the Delight song, and Naked by Louise.
I would have been here for that. Naked would have been a bit provocative, but okay, look, she's already giving you like fierce pop star. Like, let's take it there. Let's go there. But you know what, JB? You mentioned Good Thing, and that is one of my favorites on the album, which sadly wasn't released at this time.
No, so Rosie didn't get dropped, technically. The label went bust. It had financial problems. So we didn't get an official release of the album until 2018, David. Those pop gods at Pop Music Activism helped get Rosie Ribbon's album Misbehaving on digital platforms and streaming.
Honestly, this has been my favorite album discovery of this episode. Shall we talk about our highlights?
So let's kick it off with one you just mentioned, David.
I absolutely love Good Thing, the album opener. Like, that is a strong album opener. Baby, don't you know you're on to a good thing. Don't wanna be fooling. If you don't show me, then you might just blow in. You're on to a good thing. It really gave me, in a way, there's like the 80s synths and that kind of flourish in there, but it really gave me the energy of Ashley Tisdale's first track, So Much For You. Like, it was just literally, we're a pop album, we're going to serve it to you with a strong album track for track
yeah,
one.
Yeah, when it comes in with that, like grabs you by the neck.
It just,
you know,
it
like,
really grabs you
are,
by
bitch.
The neck. So I was like, okay, A plus for Good Thing. What were the other highlights for you here, JB?
Deadly Sin number 8. And oh. I think this is the naughty cousin to Tina Arena's Soulmate number 9. Your Impact.
Dare I say, if I was a Y2K pop star, I needed to have this.
Oh, he had to have it.
I have to have it. This would have been probably track 4 for me as well. Yeah. But like,
Rosie had it on hold for 2 weeks and David Lim snatched it. Deadlifting number 8, yeah. Way that you're misbehaving. Never mind what you said, but you must be deadlifting number 8. Deadlifting number 8, yeah. Way that you're breaking the band. Never mind what you said.
This is a very strong electro pop, very angular, clearly built for choreography pop album, and I cannot tell you how much joy this has given me this week, Joel. Like, listening to this on the tube on the way to work, I was like, oh my god, where has this been my entire life?
Would you buy this, David, if they pushed out a vinyl release of Misbehaving?
I don't love the artwork, but if we can discuss,
how do you not love that artwork?
Oh, I know this artwork is a bit of you, but
it's Y2K.
No, JB, no.
My hat on, looking. If only we were a video podcast, David, everyone would see how gorgeous I look. Anyway, David, what else is on there for you?
Okay, we talked about Colours before as her audition song.
Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat is shook. Red and yellow, these are the colours.
Oh, okay, Mariah. Honestly, it is purity, especially after all the like, kind of squelchy electropop R&B production we've had early in the album, just to get a pure moment of just sweetness at the end.
Show you back what Rosie is, you know, take it right back to the first time the nation saw her. Red's for anger, yellow is happiness, and blue is calm, and pink is prettiness. Purple's moody, and orange is loud, and green's so natural, my colours are found. Now, before we leave Rosie completely, David, what I found hugely interesting was that she did have Australian roots, and in 2007, she was a contestant on Australian Idol.
Even I didn't know this until you messaged me about this, JB. She was on season 5 of Australian Idol, which Natalie Gauci won. And hand on heart, I didn't watch that season, but wow, Rosie.
So Rosie could have been a young diva in an alternate universe. Rosie made it to the final 24, but didn't progress to the final 12, unfortunately. The Lost Young Diva is our Rosie Ribbons. We love it. So, David, let's go to our very special contestant, Hayley Evert. She came fifth on Pop Idol. She is a Birmingham industry veteran. Before Pop Idol, she was famously on the first series of Pop Stars, and she did do very well, but she didn't make it into the final 10, because as you're there thinking, well, she wasn't in Liberty X or Hearsay, was she? No, but she was a viewer favourite.
But I did see in her performance, I looked at her, I was like, she would be fantastic in a girl group. You know, I'm not saying she's not fantastic as a solo artist, but I would love her in a girl group. That's
my thought.
Well, she
is fantastic as a solo artist because she didn't progress to the final 10 on Pop Stars, but as a solo star, she got final 10 Pop Idol. Now, we have a follower who is a huge Pop Idol stan of Series 1. He's been giving me lots of info. He gave me the Jessica info. Apparently, at one point, management was trying to get Hayley and Jessica as a duo, and at one point was trying to get all the girls from Pop Idol Series 1 as a girl band. The UK could have had its own Young Divas.
Oh my God.
And I think
God.
That would have been fantastic. Because you look at these girls, they're all different, but
everyone is strong in their own way, but as a girl band, it would be so fucking strong.
But Hayley is a real national treasure. Like, she really was a favourite on this series of the show. So notable performance from Hayley for me is in the winner's show, so that's after the final, Will Young had his own winner's episode. Will Young and Hayley did a duet of Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
Gorgeous.
Which is absolutely glorious. He apparently also did that with Kelly Clarkson, and people in the comments are saying this is better than the Will and Kelly version. What I think is Hayley really coming into her own on the Pop Idol tour, she did a cover of the Anastasia song Made for Loving You, and it is very Britney doing Anastasia. She's giving you big pop star energy. She's doing a routine. She's got backing dancers in the VT during the special saying, she's saying, I always wanted to do a dance routine during Pop Idol and I didn't get the chance to, so I love that I'm getting to do it now.
She's living her pop star fantasy. We love to see that.
Following on from Pop Stars, as I mentioned in our last episode, she hosted the ITV2 extra show of Pop Stars The Rivals with Dane Bowers. She went on to have a fantastic career in theatre. She starred in Thriller Live and she played Sandy in Grease opposite Jonathan Wilkes. And she also independently released a single, Waste My Time, in 2011. She very famously auditioned for X Factor in 2012. She made it through to boot camp and not to judges' houses, unfortunately, but that is not to be snubbed at. Like, that is very, very respectable. And in 2016, David, she paired up with Jessica Garlick's comeback songwriter. They packed themselves off to, well, their song packed themselves off to Romania, where it was submitted as one of the potential songs for Eurovision 2016. David, I think you are ready to not just treat me, not just treat our audience, but to treat everyone like a lady. We are going in with our fourth place here. We have our female winner of the show.
Oh, I love how you just say it as that. Female winner of Pop Idol.
She's the female winner of Pop Idol 1, Zoe Birkett.
I cannot believe this, JB, but she was only 16 at the time when she did the show.
I can't believe it. Imagine doing that at 16. Apparently, Zoe was a dancer and pursuing dance as her main interest right up until 14, where she had an injury. And at that point, she knew she wouldn't be able to dance at the level she was at. So she thought, well, I better get into singing then.
And good for her. She previously auditioned for S Club 7, which I found very interesting.
Given the connection
with the show and Simon Fuller in 19 Management. So there she is. I absolutely love that in the first week she sang Whitney's I Will Always Love You, which is such a full circle moment because she would be an understudy for Alexandra Burke in The Bodyguard.
Absolutely. Big voice for our Zoe. She also very famously sung Get Happy on Big Band Week, which was on the Pop Idol Big Band album. And there's an official music video for that, David.
Oh my God. Wow.
which is, you know, behind the scenes of the Pop Idol tour, Zoe performing, very theatrical, very fabulous.
Forget your troubles, come on, get happy. You better chase all your cares away. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. Get ready for the judgment day. The sun is shining, come on, get happy. The Lord is waiting to take your hand. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy.
In a world, David, and I think this is, might have been what's some confusion here, is I always thought that that was her debut single, because I remember that getting pushed on music channels and all of that sort of thing. And it wasn't. It was just, you know, a track to serve, the tour, the album, all of that.
I wasn't even aware of this. Like, I need to check it out. Yeah.
So following Idol, Zoe did what any young diva in training would do, and she signed with 19 Management. And in January 2003, we got the Zoe Burkett single, Treat Me Like a Lady, written by Sarah Watmore.
Oh, my God. Look, I must admit, when I saw this title, Treat Me Like a Lady, I thought it was going to be like a female Tom Jones kind of song. I was very surprised by this direction that 19 Management took her in. You know, this is a bubblegum electropop bop that it's giving parallels to S Club Juniors. Like, just a one-off single, whereas the girls of S Club Juniors featuring Zoe Burkett. Like, this would have been so sassy, so much fun.
Girls Sleepover, Girls Night Out.
Yeah, but also they put everything into the music video of this song. Like, I was really impressed with it. Zoe looked great. She did look like a real teen pop star, you know, hanging out with her mates, being cool, but it's giving that kind of Christina Milian AM to PM vibe, where it was just cool girl hanging out with her mates, but she clearly looks like a pop star.
UK Samantha Jade on the Step Up soundtrack. I think it's a real bop. She looks fantastic. It's slick. It's very American.
Now, I want to ask you, JB, do you think this was a little too late?
I don't think it was too little too late.
Given the timing of when this single came out and also the sound of it, like at that point, music was getting a little bit grittier.
But Atomic Kitten was still just about going, I think, at this point.
But Atomic Kitten did have a little bit of a maturation at this point. But I feel like Miss Zoe coming in with this bop, I don't know. I feel like it was a miscalculation from 19.
Yeah, I think she was aged before her years by singing things so well, like Get Happy, and that getting a push, and that me thinking that was her debut single. We're expecting a Judy Garland thing, you know, a musical theatre thing. Like, I always thought that's what Zoe's career was. I don't actually have any recollection of this song. Went in at number 12, which is hugely respectable. So it's a real shame we didn't get further singles. But our girl Zoe now is a veteran of the industry. She went on and did TV presenting, and she is a huge theatre star here in the UK. She's currently starring and thriving in the West End production of Moulin Rouge.
Oh, yes, Zoe. Gitchy, gitchy, yeah, yeah, da, da.
She's also been...
Treat me like a lady.
Oh, now that is the mashup we need. So, David, at third place, we have what I would say in UK reality TV show history is the first ever redemption arc. We have Darius Campbell, Dinesh, Glasgow, heartthrob in the later years. I'd go out on a limb to say it.
Oh, really? In the later years? Okay, JB.
Darius was quite an infamous contestant on Pop Stars, the Hearsay Liberty X TV show. Borderline joke act, you know, he got very on the show, but he was sort of ridiculed and made fun of, and he was just trying to do his own thing. Like,
he wasn't doing himself any favors on Pop Stars Series 1. His rendition of Baby One More Time was very over the top and all over the shop, and it was very showboaty, but in a way
just trying something, and that's how we learn.
I know, but in a way it was entertaining television. Even Anton Deck was mocking him after his audition. There was a little skit at the end where one of them put on a brown wig and sang Baby One More Time in that really mocking way. I was just like, okay, you wouldn't do that today, would you?
No, but what I feel by this point, because Darius had redefined who he is, even with the joke stuff, we're kind of laughing with everyone. And at this point, I think it only helped Darius. And I guess on the positive side, not that the bar was low, but because he's come in with this new Darius 2.0, you can kind of keep on dazzling people when they have that in mind. So notable performance for me is he done a week where they were all singing two songs and he sung It's Not Unusual by Tom Jones. And then he sung Hole Again by Atomic Kitten with Ms. Natasha Hamilton in the audience.
Scream.
Yeah, he did this whole thing. He was like, last time I sang a song by a female artist, I didn't have the chance to get her permission, but Ms. Natasha of Atomic Kitten is here. Do I have your permission? And she's like, yeah, go on, Darius, go for it, lads. I mean, she wasn't. She was very polite and was just like, yeah, go for it, but that's me doing it.
Now, where was that on the album, Darius? Honestly, we needed that version. If you see me walking down the street, staring at the sky. Am I close? Am
Darius
I close
to is the on rendition? The call, ladies and gentlemen and non-binary friends. While it's not on the CD, he did have a B-side of a live version of a mashup of, I want to say Faith or another song, and Bootylicious by Destiny's Child.
He did Bootylicious?
Yeah, which he has and he's released, but I couldn't find it online when I was looking
no
for it. So
way.
We're
going
to have to
did
buy
he do
that
like
CD.
A, Nikki, can you handle
no,
it?
No.
Simon, can you handle
he
it?
He didn't do it on the show. I don't think he did it on the show. I think he did it more in the Darius live tour setting.
Oh,
but
what a shame.
Dr. Fox, can you handle this?
Wow, this guy's already giving us so much entertainment for this episode, and we've not even talked about the hit single. Wow.
Yeah, what I love though, I just really do love this whole redemption arc, and I think it makes the redemption arc even better for Darius that, well, unfortunately he didn't make it through to the final 10 originally.
At some point the British public clearly went, look, he's doing his thing and he's really clawing his way back,
and we want to see more of it. Darius soared his way through to the top three, came third on this show, turned down an offer from Simon Cowell. He signed with producer Steve Lillywhite.
It was a pretty big deal. Like, prior to this, he's worked with Big Country and he would go on to work with that U2. He would also sign Razorlight down the line and produce Jason Mraz's album.
David, he kicked off his solo career with a huge smash hit single, Colorblind, July 2002. These guys are so quick. Everyone's finishing in February 2002, few months getting it out, like no time to waste.
Colorblind really did some things in Australia. I was a fan of this song from back in the day.
Nobody told me it feels so good. Nobody said you'd be so beautiful. Nobody warned me about
God, I really enjoyed Colorblind. Like, it was quite present on Australian radio. This is a highlight on my 2000s breezy pop playlist. You have Emma Bunton, What Took You So Long, and then we go into Darius, Colorblind.
The like, definitive car desert music videos.
You know the mood board, JB. You know the mood board. Windows down, tinted shades on.
Hopefully some sunscreen on. We've not seen it, but we hope that you have got some sunscreen on.
I must say, I didn't even know Darius was in a Pop Idol franchise. And maybe in a similar way, I didn't know Sarah Watmore was in a Pop Idol franchise. I knew Gareth and Will were. It was very prevalent in a narrative.
Apart from if you're in the final two, it works in your favour. Like, Pop Idol was a platform and it got you where you are. But now you're launching internationally as a star. You're not launching as a Pop Idol contestant. I've got to admit, I have a bit of a crush on Darius.
Mm.
I just do. Like, I can't really put it into words. Like, I'm just a bit like, oh, it's a bit gorgeous. So this was a number one smash hit here in the UK. Number one in Scotland, his home country. 61 in Australia. It really did do something there. Number 9 on the Euro Hot 100. 13 in Ireland. And, you know, this was a really successful era for Darius. He had further top 10 singles. He had a platinum-selling debut album.
Dive In is called. And that I did for this episode. And you know what? If it ain't broke, don't try to fix it. Darius really did give us an album of cohesive songs that supported Colorblind. For me personally, there weren't any standouts, but I was very happy to see him doing his thing.
It was very American pop rock sounding, I thought. Where was the big pop rock mid-tempo Darius American push with that gorgeous tan he's got in some of the later videos? Like, looking slick and sexy, just get him to America. So Darius went on to support Shakira during her world tour, which is fantastic. He also went on to complete his own sellout UK tour. The Dive In tour took place during April and May 2003. 15 dates were scheduled, and due to huge public demand, it ended up being 23 dates. He went on to do another album. He's another one of our pop idol alumni that has gone on to have a hugely successful career in theatre, David. He went on to star in Chicago at 25 years young. He was the youngest actor to play the role Billy Flynn, which is a phenomenal achievement.
Oh, yeah, he's a bit of a Billy Flynn, yes. We'd like to see it.
He also starred in Guys and Dolls, Gone with the Wind, From Here to Eternity, and more recently, he starred in Funny Girl with Sheridan Smith, Devo. He went on to win Pop Star to Opera Star in 2010, and he is also dabbling in being a film producer. So Darius has his hand in many pies. Is that the term? I don't know. He has his eggs in certainly more than one basket, I'll tell you that. So, David, shall we get to number 2 on Pop Idol? Ooh, ooh,
ooh, ah. Ladies and gentlemen, here we are, Mr. Gareth Gates.
So we have the Bradford Prince of Pop here. Gareth was a real front runner and national favourite.
That hair in primary school and early high school, that was my hair. The kind of spiked up, twisted hair gel situation.
You've got to find some pictures for us, Davo.
Oh, no, there's way too many embarrassing pictures of that. But Gareth Gates was right on my wavelength there. And I must say, watching his Pop Idol performances, JB, it was giving me a little bit of Joel McElderry.
Yeah, it's the original Joel McElderry.
Yeah, it's a kind of innocent, beautiful, pure voice.
Sort of, but not Deer in Headlights, but like the lovely, like innocent version of that. Like thrown into this situation, we'll go for it, but just sort of learning as you go.
Exactly, but also giving like really classic performances that the aunties and the grandmas can stan. And, you know, there was a lot of talk in his time on Pop Idol about his stammering and him overcoming that, which I think was great, A, for visibility and also like us talking about it, but also B, you know, it's not like, take pity on Gareth, but it was more like, hey, he's doing it, he's dealing with it, and look at how he's singing.
Absolutely. So standout performances for me, Gareth singing You Are Everything with Rachel Stevens. Now this would be my big Alexandra Burke Beyonce guest moment. Luckily for Will, this was performed after he was crowned, because I think this could have swayed the public the other way.
I love this for Gareth, and I love this for Rachel, and for you, JB, more importantly, the dream.
Ladies and gentlemen, my dream. She said never again, but here she is, Rachel Lauren Stevens. He went on, signed a huge record deal with Simon Cowell, went out March 2002, released his debut single, Unchained Melody. This is a song he'd sung twice on the show, so I think it's a very savvy move. And it was released 3 weeks after Will's winner single and knocked Will off the top spot. Mad.
Lonely rivers go to the sea, to the sea, to the openness of the sea. Me in Australia on LimeWire, I was downloading Unchained Melody by Gareth Gates. Okay, I was ready to stand this. Growing up in Malaysia, I know Unchained Melody. All my uncles would sing this at karaoke. It was a staple.
Now, what's wild, David, is tracks 2 and 3 on this single is the winner's double A side. So it's his version of Evergreen and Anything Is Possible. That is really like if Girls Aloud had released Sacred Trust. So the single did go double platinum and was voted 2002's Record of the Year by viewers of ITV. Now, David, I just want
to... And by my mum.
And by your mum. This music video, David, is interesting because looking at it, it does look very winner single music video, but it's also very expensive. It's very American looking. The lighting is absolutely stunning in a mainstream America gorgeous way.
I'm really like impressed with the way they've handled Gareth's like debut era, because all the music videos are very top notch, and it was more of a positioning of him going, look, he's not just from some talent show, like he is a pop star with a big following that you need to take note of.
So let's move on to July 2002. He releases Any One of Us, open brackets, Stupid Mistake, close brackets.
It can happen to any one of us. Anyone you think of, anyone can fall, anyone can hurt someone they love. Hearts will break, cause I made a stupid mistake.
There's a lot of songs that I've been cheated on, but there's not enough songs about I fucked up, I cheated on you, or I messed up in a relationship, right? And that's what this song is. I find it absolutely fascinating. This is gonna be my favorite song of what we're gonna talk about on this episode today.
Wow.
This is probably gonna be my favorite music video that we're gonna talk about today, except for a few Rosie Ribbons choreography
more than
pop
Sarah.
Videos. I mean, I already love Sarah's Sarah. Video, but like, music video wise, oh, I do love this one.
We've got another expensive music video here. This is shot in Venice.
James Bond style.
No expense was spared on Gareth's launch. These are the most expensive music videos we'll talk about this whole episode, I think.
I love this video for Gareth, but the way they make him sit there in a suit and tie in like, you know, in a gondola, I'm just like, he kind of looks like he's going to prom.
This is the first original track from Gareth we're seeing. And what a great way to kick off his career. It really sets the tone. To be honest, I'm absolutely shocked that I wasn't more into Gareth than I was. It was a number one smash hit here for Gareth in the UK. Two consecutive number ones thus far. Number one in Scotland, number one in the Netherlands, number two in Ireland, 3 in Germany, 3 in Hungary, 6 on the Euro Hot 100. I mean, didn't make it to Australia, unfortunately, by the looks of it. Too busy on LimeWire you were, David.
Sorry, Gareth.
So let's get to September 2002. We have a double A-side of both Will and Gareth singing The Long and Winding Road. And the other half of the double A-side is Suspicious Minds. And then the B-side is Will Young singing I Get the Sweetest Feeling. Lots going on here, but it's a continuation of the pop idol universe. Now, Long and Winding Road, was it needed?
I really liked it for both of them, if I'm
wow.
honest. I know.
Please,
you're not
be
expecting
honest. This is
this.
An honest space. I was not expecting that at all.
It always leads me to your door. The wild and windy.
Really felt it.
So I didn't, but that's fine. I think I just think it wasn't needed, but it was needed because it coincided with the Will and Gareth and Zoe arena tour. So it's Will and Gareth plus very special guest Zoe. So it makes absolute sense. Pop Idol franchise is huge, their tour is huge. You want a song where they can come together. So the other flip side of this double A side is Gareth Gates' Suspicious Minds. So this just shows how much is going on here. We've got a simple white background performance interwoven with Stitch. We've interwoven with clips from Lilo and Stitch. We got big Disney deals, songs going on here for Gareth so early on in his career. We can go on together with suspicious minds, and we can build our dreams. It was a UK number one smash hit again, and a number one smash hit in Scotland. So let's move on, David, to a very exciting October 2002, where Gareth releases his debut album, What My Heart Wants to Say. Can I kick off, please, with a standout track?
I want to hear it.
I think we're all our ones are going to be exactly the same. Mm. Sentimental. Like, okay, bop. Like, I'm sorry, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it either.
Like, it had no right to be this good. I feel like this is a schizophrenic kind of album for Gareth Gates.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Heaven and Hell.
The way they've sequenced a track, I don't know if you've noticed it.
Bops and ballads.
Exactly. It's kind of like half Mother's Day release and the other half I'm trying to be Shane Ward. Before Shane Ward was the thing. So Sentimental was one of those kind of like more interesting artistic choices on the album.
Which is great. What else was a standout for you, Davo, on this album?
I really enjoyed Good Thing. I think that was a good track.
To me, it was a very Y2K Take That or Adam Rickett song. I was looking for a new direction. You gotta keep moving for your own protection.
And it was produced by Steve Mack and, you know, Wayne Hector's involved. So there's some really good people involved in this album, like Jürgen Ellefsen, who has written Sometimes for Britney.
Now, David, if you haven't got this as one of your favourites, you are mad. We have here, open brackets, I've Got No, close brackets, Self Control. This is a Lost Atomic Kitten track and I absolutely love it. I'm in such confusion, I can't help
myself. I think I need protection from a deep affection. I've got no self-control is, you know, me in front of KFC, really, at 3 a.m. after the Brewers.
This, to me, is the best song on the album in terms of what we do and what we celebrate here at Right Back At You. You're making me high, you're making me sweat, I've got no self-control.
It's written by Rob Davis, who has done a lot of these disco pop records for our divas.
There you go.
Also Jules and Stone, who has worked with Rachel Stevens and
S Club 7,
Sophie Ellis Bextor.
And lastly, but not least, I was shocked. I was shook. If I wasn't a bald man already, I would be bald by now. My wig, it was snatched, if we still say that, in 2022. Towards the end of the album, Walk On By, a Britney cover on a Gareth Gates debut album. I can't believe it. Oh my God. Walk On By was the B-side to Stronger for anyone not in the know. And now this is such an unintended flex. Pop stars today should add a Britney B-side to their albums just for a bit of credibility. I just want to know how this happened, if someone was like, yep, this is what should be on it, you know?
And did Gareth know that it was a B-side? Like, so many questions, right?
Gorgeous ballad for both Britney and Gareth. So this album was a huge number two hit here in the UK. 2 times platinum, David. It went in at number 52 in the Austrian albums, 45 in Belgium, 11 on the Dutch albums charts, 13 on the European albums charts, 10 on the German and Hungary albums charts, number 19 in Ireland. Maybe Ireland didn't love Pop Idol that much. It's 2 on the Scottish album charts. Let's move on to December 2002 with the final single from Gareth's debut album, What My Heart Wants to Say.
But if I be gone tomorrow, would you know how deep my love goes? If I was gone forever, would you know how much I care?
I love the way that this music video was shot. Like, it was so cinematic in a black and white way. This perfectly encapsulates the Pop Idol dream, doesn't it? You're famous, you've got fans, that kind of like walking through backstage of an arena before your show, taking you on stage and you're on stage performing for the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, it's quite a boring song choice considering of all those bops and highlights on the album. But you've got to do what you've got to do at this point in your album campaign. And look, just looking at all this stuff, if I wasn't such a Will stan when I was a kid, I think I would have been really into Gareth. So this was number 5 here in the UK, 6 in Scotland, 20 in Ireland, 16 in Norway and 52 in Switzerland. Gareth went on to release another 2 albums and more recently was part of the Big Reunion Series 2, being part of the boy band Fifth Story alongside my hunk Adam Rickett, Dane Bowers, Kavanagh and Kenzie, his former hairstyle twin. He also took part in Dancing on Ice and has done loads of theatre as well. He starred in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, should have incorporated Rosie's colours though in the show, Les Miserables, Loserville, Legally Blonde and Boogie Nights. Right, this is his moment. He is our evergreen pop idol, David. Let's kick off into the Wokingham King of Pop, Will Young.
The moment the nation has been waiting for, we have the results.
Well, well done, guys, both of you. You've both done tremendously well to get this far out of 10,000 people, the final 2 standing here. And it's been very, very, very close.
The winner of Pop Idol 2002 is Will!
Now, Will was a real highlight throughout the whole series. He was really kind of himself and he just shone through in a show where everyone was singing with generic backing tracks. Will really managed to not just sing them well, but he managed to make them his own and he performed them like an artist performing their own songs. He owned the songs, whereas other people, when they were doing amazing performances, sung the song well. He owned these songs in a different level to everyone else, in my opinion.
I was watching one of his YouTube videos to promote his book. He has a memoir out and he was talking about his Pop Idol days and he was saying how as a kid, out of fear of being outed as gay, he didn't sing because he had quite a high-pitched voice and he sang in quite a high-pitched tone. And so when he went on Pop Idol, it was kind of like a little bit of an emancipation for him. He said, looking back, like there was such innocence and such sweetness to the way he sang. And that was exactly what I got from those performances. There was a real purity to it. And also, like, yes, what you said about owning it and making his own as an artist, but that to me kind of says that you haven't been overly picked on by a vocal coach or a singing school to do it a certain way. Like, there is a certain kind of improvisation that you've brought into it from your experience and your love of the idols that you grew up listening to, and you've made it your own.
Yeah, absolutely. He owned the songs. He didn't let the songs own him. You watch any clip of Will on this show and every song is a standout, but some real notable performances are when he sung Ain't No Sunshine and obviously Light My Fire, which would then go on to be a single. So David, shall we kick off with the Pop Idol 2002 February winner single, the double A-side, Anything Is Possible and Evergreen. Let's start off with Evergreen.
I'm gonna take this moment, make it last forever. I'm gonna give my heart away and pray with
You know, I came into Will Young from Leave Right Now onwards. Like, for the longest time, I thought Friday's Child was his first album. So in preparation for this episode, it was a real kind of deep dive into, okay, how did they lay the foundations for Will Young? Okay, Jolie B, as someone who has been campaigning for Will, tell me about your thoughts of the winner single.
I loved it. I think in terms of legacy, I think Evergreen is the most remembered one and is seen as the triple A side of this double A side, should we say.
I mean, if you look at the YouTube views, Anything Is Possible has under 500,000 views, whereas Evergreen has 6.9 million views. So
he took that moment and he made it last forever. Now, this is a Westlife cover, David. It's an album track on their album World of Our Own. But it needed William Young to make it a sensational track. When you listen to Evergreen, do you think Gareth is still on the track doing backing vocals in the chorus? I can hear him somewhere in there, or someone that sounds like him anyway.
Look, I mean, as we heard with the Beatles cover, there is a real synergy between both vocalists. So I don't know if it was left on there or if it is just very similar. Like,
yeah,
they're both male vocalists with a certain kind of like softness and tenderness to their tone.
Absolutely. So the music video for Evergreen, we have our kind of stereotypical winner single. We've got Will performing on stage with a live band. We've got blacks and reds in that vampire adjacent colouring of the time that we absolutely loved in the late 90s and early 2000s. Let's move to Anything Is Possible. So we have Chris Braid and Kathy Dennis as the songwriters. Simon Fuller loved their work on Have You Ever and asked them to write a song.
Not the brandy Have You Ever.
The S Club 7.
Have you ever loved to lost somebody? That one.
That one. There you go. Now,
not have you ever loved someone?
Never apologize. We are always here for Brandy.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because I feel like music video wise, Anything Is Possible.
That's got a bit of light better video. Shade, isn't it, Dave?
That was the day to Evergreen's night, right? So in Anything Is Possible, we've got gorgeous Will Young, crisp white shirt, slightly unbuttoned, you know, straight cut jeans. He's just kind of walking around a tropical island on the beach in the jungle.
Very gorgeous.
It feels like it's a calendar shoot in a way. And then, you know, you throw to Evergreen, he's like performing in a theater, like a local theater center. So it was like, okay.
Well, quite a glamorous local theater center.
Oh, very glamorous. I mean, it's like Bournemouth plus.
Have you ever been to Bournemouth, David?
No. I just feel
that's
like it was
it
Bournemouth.
Looks, that's just how
I
it
feel
looks.
Like it was Bournemouth Deluxe. Am I wrong?
No. So, David, this went straight in at number one here in the UK. It stayed there for three consecutive weeks before being knocked off by Bloody Gareth. So Gareth topped Will. Can you believe it? And it was the best-selling song of 2002, the fastest-selling UK debut in UK chart history. It sold over 400,000 copies on its first day of release, over 1 million copies by the end of the week. It went on to sell 1.79 million copies. Fantastic. It was the biggest selling single of the 21st century until Pharrell Williams overtook it with Happy. Number two in Ireland, number one in Scotland, three on the Eurochart Hot 100. So let's move on to May 2002. Light My Fire, David. Now, Will performed this twice on the show. His version is canon. He also performed it on World Idol, where he became fifth.
Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Light my fire, light my fire, light my fire. Oh, yeah. Light, light,
I love this song so much. The music video gorgeous, very arty. It's so interesting to see straight on this early in his career, the Pop Idol winner is getting to release such artistic music videos that we know Will really loves and where he kind of thrives as an artist.
His kind of signature Will, yeah.
Signature Will for his second single, fantastic. So the music video centers around a model playing Edie Sedgwick, which is inspired by the film that she was in, Chow Manhattan. And watching this, as much as we're loving it and being like, oh, like, it's so interesting watching it as an adult and seeing it go, oh, Edie Sedgwick, that's what this is about. When as a kid, it's just like, oh, that's a black and white music video, like, whatever. Watching it made me think, has Kylie ever played Edie Sedgwick? Like, they've got such a look about them that Kylie could really fit into.
Mm.
And it turns out she had. In 2013, Kylie performed in a one-off comedy drama for Sky Arts as part of Playhouse Presents, and I couldn't believe it. But circling back to Will, UK number one for 2 weeks, number one in Scotland, number four in Italy, five in Ireland, eight on the Eurochart Hot 100. September, he released Long and Winding Road with Gareth. October 2002, we have From Now On, the debut album from William Young.
Now, Joel, I was really impressed with how much this was laying the foundations for who Will Young is as an artist. Listening to this, I was like, yeah, this is a perfect bridging gap from what he did on the show with, you know, that kind of distinct, very jazzy, very kind of adult contemporary pop tones, but done quite classily.
As you were saying, right, it's the perfect album for everyone that's followed him on the show, but it also perfectly straddles who Will Young the artist is and what he's going to be. If I was an artist out there, rushed from a talent show, my first album, it would be such a mixed bag. I wouldn't know what was going on.
Yeah, but I love that the way that they've waited basically half a year to produce this. They could have rushed this out in May when Light My Fire was on and just given you like an album of mostly covers. You know, I don't know whether it's Will going, yeah, this is me as an artist. I need time. I need to work this out and give him a bit of time. I just wonder what it was like and how it was received at the time.
Everyone loved Will from the get-go, like mums,
kids, aunties, grandmas.
The record-buying public, like, loved him.
Yeah. So, JB, what were your favourite album tracks here? Because I've got one that I absolutely love.
Speaking of Kathy, I loved Cruel to Be Kind. Now, this is written by Will and Kathy. Again, follows the suit of all the other tracks. But I just think it's great that he managed to find this sound in 2003, considering he's straight off a talent show.
Babe, I'm sorry, but I just can't stand the pain. If you're leaving, baby, let me say one last thing. You tell me I don't care, but you know it just ain't true.
So what's the one that you absolutely love?
Oh, JB, I have to say, What's in Goodbye by Burt Bacharach and Kathy Dennis.
Oh.
This feels like an instant classic. Honestly, this is going straight to my Bathing in a Moonlight playlist. Ooh. Burt Bacharach himself premiered this song live at the Royal Albert Hall when he was performing on tour, brought Will Young out on stage. This was a song that Burt wrote specifically for Will's album. I mean, what an honor!
What's in goodbye? A place so vast and insincere saddens me each time I hear it.
So, again, gorgeous song. I think it's lovely and mellow in a way that I can only sum up as British rom-com coffee shop.
Ah!
And it could also be the lost cousin to our Emma Free Me album track.
Honestly, we needed this album from Burt and Will and Kathy at this point. Absolutely. Would love to see what that energy would have been like.
Get an Emma duet on there.
Imagine.
And then other than that, I also loved the titular track From Now On. I just think this album, especially the second half of the album, believe it or not, is a really cohesive vibe.
I think it's because we're getting into the artistry of Will Young and away from the covers.
Yeah.
Like, I do agree. The second half of the album is when you really get a mood and a feel for it.
Now, David, this was certified 2x platinum here in the UK, over 800,000 copies, number one selling album. Fan-bloody-tastic. So let's finish up the episode, before we gotta leave right now, with the double A side, Don't Let Me Down and You and I. And in the Netherlands, it was just released as You and I, No, Don't Let Me Down. Now, this was a Children in Need single.
Don't let me down. I'm telling you that you're my baby. The world's gone crazy.
So Don't Let Me Down was a new song that was recorded separate from the album. They just felt like they needed a new material for it, which is lovely. It was written by Will with Richard Stannard and Julian Gallagher. But my big focus on this, Joel, believe it or not, is You and I.
Why would I believe it or not? It's a classic.
Well, I'm glad you feel this way because it's a little bit of a moody bop. So I wasn't sure if you were here with me on this, but there was something in the music video for this, Joel. Like,
oh, there was something in the music video for this.
Oh, do you get it too? I was like,
right, music video. Hello, twunk pop star William Young. Bloody hell! We're both clutching our chest and pearls.
We really are. Okay, like this is peak hotness.
So hot right here and right now.
We're getting like the whole tank top situation with the biceps showing, like double tank top. But also we're getting like, you know, black roll neck and with a long winter coat. Like we were getting the range.
Oh my God. Like he looks hot. So hot in this video. Hot. Hot by Melby. Hot. So right. He's
I just have to say to everyone listening that it's like, oh yeah, really measured critique, very, very in depth. And we get to this video of this really moody song. We're like, hot.
It's a big gay male 2000s pop star. Let us have this. Okay. I need the Will Young Madeline collection because I need that green coat that gives two become one vibes. I need that green coat. Is it black or is it dark purple? Or is it dark brown leather coat? I'm going to need both of them. No, but for You and I, this is my favourite song of the album. Potentially my favourite song we're talking about today. I think it's a gorgeous song. It's always been one of my favourite Will songs.
Is
it? It's a real standout to me, yeah.
Wow.
Gorgeous. So this was a number two smash hit here in the UK. 3 in the Netherlands, 28 in Italy, 27 in Ireland, 3 in Belgium. Now, on that note, David, I think we better leave right now. But I have loved this journey back
into one of the best times
of my childhood, to be honest. Watching this show, following these people, following their careers, fills me with such joy because it is a time, obviously it was a produced show, but it was all about the talent and there was so much innocence to it. And it was really, there was a lot of purity to it in the way that is lost in what it set the template for. So I love just diving into this. Like these are people that are like living my heart forever, you know, and I hope they do now to you and the listeners.
And I'm so happy to be able to just absorb them in 2022 eyes and just be like really super appreciative of what these people did. Like straight off the show, series one, doing what they did off the back of that, like Darius, Rosie, Jessica Garlick,
Sarah,
Miss Zoe, obviously Sarah, Will and Gareth, like amazing. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
You have been listening to Right Back At You. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, you're not only a young diva, but you are a pop idol. You can follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. You can follow me at Dr_JoelB and you can follow him
at Love Limmy.
Until next time, bye.
Bye.